Fashion Central Debate. Dan Donovan.
Talk about a coward and acquit it.
Michael Grimm.
Dan Donovan is a coward and won't face me in the debate.
This is Election Central Live on 77 WABC. Now, back to the debate for New York's 11th Congressional District. Here's the moderator, Rita Cosby.
And everybody, you are back here live at the debate, the first GOP primary debate between Congressman Dan Donovan and his challenger, former Congressman Michael Grimm. We're going to continue now right with the debate. We left off in a pretty heated moment talking about immigration. I want to ask you, Congressman Grimm, the issue, of course, is about an undocumented immigrant. The case of Pablo Villavicencio, he is the pizza delivery man to Fort Hamilton. You admitted that you hired undocumented workers in your restaurant, and you went to prison for it, for tax fraud. But it was tied to that, as you've even said. Are you in a position to be criticizing Pablo or Governor Cuomo or anybody in this case?
I think I'm in the best position because I have the experience. I had to live through it. It was a horrible ordeal, but here's the reality. Any small business owner will tell you, when you have the lowest skilled jobs and you're paying minimum wage, no one else shows up. Let's take a dishwasher, for example. A dishwasher position for restaurants throughout Manhattan. I'll challenge anyone. Go to any small restaurant throughout this city, and you're going to have undocumented workers in the kitchen. Why? Because Americans, unfortunately, don't show up for those jobs anymore. You post, you know, I had approximately 15 or 16 employees. The last three or four, we couldn't get Americans to take the job. That's just a hard, harsh reality, which is why I advocated, even as when I was in Congress for 4 years, I said we needed a robust guest worker program for those unskilled jobs, not jobs that on the construction sites where we need those good union jobs. I'm talking about unskilled, like washing dishes, a guest worker program and E-Verify. I always advocated for that, and that will stop restaurant owners and small business owners from being put in that position where you either have one or two choices. Either you close your business or you hire the only people that show up for the job. It's unfortunate, but that's the reality. And anyone that disagrees with that, you know, you have to prove me wrong, because every diner, every restaurant I go to, every one of these small businesses that have very low-paying, unskilled jobs, unfortunately, they're the only ones that show up.
And I'll get you to respond to that. You bring up an interesting point, too, about not just illegal immigrants, but also those who hire illegal immigrants
are committing a crime.
So
that's
let's
what
get
they
you
doing.
To respond to what
crime.
He just said.
And so what I think he just said was anybody who wants to be in business, in a restaurant business, has to commit a crime. And to claim that we need E-Verify, if we had E-Verify, he wouldn't have had to, he wouldn't have been able to hire those illegal aliens that he hired. So he's saying we need E-Verify now since he's out of the business. But good thing we didn't have it back when he had his restaurant, because he would have had to verify their citizenship or committed another crime by saying they were citizens when they weren't. You know, it's really amazing to me. It's ironic, Rita, that we have somebody who's criticizing my tax vote when he committed tax fraud. We have now somebody who's saying that we should verify every worker in a restaurant when he hired people who were here illegally and he didn't verify it. And now he's telling everybody in the world, well, you're going to have to commit a crime, otherwise you're not going to be able to stay in business. You have to gonna be aware of the Trump administration, because this is the thing they're cracking down on, employers who are hiring illegal aliens. This is the crux of the Trump administration's crackdown on illegal aliens. And as I said before, he says he was in a witch hunt, that he was prosecuted, that he was sought after by the Obama administration. The Trump administration would be locking him up if he was still in business.
I'll let you respond real quick.
That's absolutely ridiculous. First of all, and again, if my opponent is saying to every small business out there in Staten Island and Brooklyn, and he's saying to the school teachers that have a little business on the side where they tutor for cash, if he's saying to every fireman out there that has a little, you know, construction job on the side where they get paid cash, for all the cops that do a little security where they get paid cash, that they all belong in jail, and all of those restaurant owners that give the kid over the summer a little off the books job over the summer, they should all be in jail. Well, that's a great platform to run on. I disagree. Is the system perfect? No, it's broken. And small business owners, unfortunately, which is the lifeblood of our small communities, have to make a decision every single day how they're going to survive.
And I don't think
do you close
cops,
every
quickly,
single business?
And I don't think our cops are firefighters or school teachers commit crimes. But we know one thing.
But you know
Michael
they do work
Grimm
off
did.
The books.
We know Michael
but
Grimm
you know
did,
they do, but you're saying you would criminalize
court.
Them. And what I'm saying is I wouldn't criminalize them. Anyone that gets caught working off the books, the history of our city has always been to give a civil fine. If you're an employer or an employee that worked off the books, in the entire history of our city, you were given a civil fine. Only one person was treated differently. That's me. But okay, he's at the Trump administration, which targets
Let me move on to NYCHA. Big settlement. It looks like $2 billion settlement. It's going to cost the city with federal investigators to make repairs. Needless to say, both of you know how decrepit some of the public housing and the conditions. What's your reaction to the settlement by the city?
I think I think it just shows that the de Blasio administration can't run our housing authority. People were living, I don't know how many thousands of people without heat this past winter. You see the photographs of the paint chips falling from the ceilings, and then they lied about the paint quality, the lead quality in the paint. I think it's just, it shows you that under this administration, the poor people that have to live in the housing authority complexes can't trust the de Blasio administration to protect them from lead, and certainly can't rely on them for heat in the wintertime.
Go ahead, Congressman.
Again, I think we have common ground there. This is an abhorrent act, which I believe someone should be held accountable. It's not just enough to expose it. You know, you want to talk about locking people up. Listen, putting people in harm's way in their homes, their children, exposing them to lead paint and so on, that those are the types of offenses that people should go to jail for, not having three delivery boys off the books. In the Blasio administration, when you think about it, they want to protect illegal aliens and with a sanctuary city policy, but yet they don't want to take care of the actual citizens that live here in these NYCHA housing projects. So I think it's long overdue that it's been exposed. But I want to just say, I think anyone that's had a job in this city knows this. This is no revelation. When I was a young FBI agent going on arrests and taking down doors in these projects, you could see then, you're talking 20 years ago, more than 20 years ago, just how terrible these conditions were. So this is long overdue, and it's of absolutely no surprise. The NYCHA housing projects, those people have been denied basic housing for decades, and it's really a disgrace and a black eye for the city of New York.
I'm going to get you to try to keep your answers a little brief because I want to make sure we get to a whole bunch of more important topics. I can spend a lot of time with both of you. The opioid crisis, a huge issue, a big epidemic, needless to say, especially in Staten Island, elsewhere, really, I mean, in lots of parts of New York City. What do you plan, Congressman, to do to fix the crisis, and how do you differ than what your opponent would
do? Let me explain to you what I have done. I was the district attorney for nearly 12 years in Staten Island when this crisis occurred. I started a pilot program that became a national program by equipping and training every police officer on Staten Island with Narcan so they could revive people who were overdosing. I had one of the best treatment courts in New York State for the 12 years I was the district attorney. I had the highest conviction rate of felons in New York City. Many of those people were drug dealers. When I got to Congress, actually when my opponent got to Congress, he asked me what he could do in the area of criminal justice. I said, get us into this national network that New York pharmacists and New York physicians can check a database to make sure that people aren't circumventing the system and going to New Jersey for a doctor, going to New Jersey to get their prescriptions filled. This is important to me. As the DA of Staten Island, I had three crossings to New Jersey. In 4 years, my opponent never got that accomplished. In my first 4 months, I got New York into the database with 38 other states, and every one of our border states is in that database.
All right, let me get him to respond. Go ahead, Congressman.
There's two things. Number one, if you really look at my opponent's record as the district attorney, when he first came in, I believe it was around 2003, there was barely a problem. That problem grew into a crisis. That crisis became an epidemic on his watch. So he's touting all these great statistics. But the reality is this epidemic was fostered under your watch. That's number one. Number two, I went to your office to bring a federal bill that I wrote myself to make I-STOP, the New York State I-STOP program, a federal bill. It didn't get passed into law. It did not get signed into law. I fought hard, but it wouldn't get passed. And you didn't even reintroduce that bill. Why not?
Because in 4 months, I called up New York State and got them into the program. It took one phone call and one letter to Governor Cuomo. The morning that we were sending the letter, the governor announced that New York State would participate.
Let me move on, because we don't have a lot of time. Very quickly.
New York State had the I-STOP program. That was
the National Network
that I asked you to do,
and you didn't get it done, and I got it done in 4 months.
It was never signed into law. He didn't even reintroduce the bill, and he's saying he got it done in 4 months.
Let's move on to the issue of race relations. You talked about your time as DA. You were the DA in Staten Island, Congressman, during the Eric Garner case, of course. I want to talk a little bit about race relations, your thoughts on that, how you could heal the divide, and also your reaction, both of you, about the New York Jets chairman Chris Johnson saying that he will pay the fines of any players who don't want to stand during the national anthem. And I'm particularly interested in your reaction as a former Marine.
Well, once a Marine, always a Marine. I'm still a Marine. Everyone has a First Amendment right, okay? I don't dispute that, but they conflate the issue, okay? This is about you're on the field to play. People are paying tickets, and you're representing the NFL, not yourself as an individual, once you step on that field, once you have your jersey on. So I think the argument for First Amendment goes right out the window. And to pick the national anthem as while our flag is flying to kneel down is the second problem. There's a time and a place for everything, and these multimillionaire players have plenty of access to the press if they want to protest. But to take a knee when so many people risk their lives every single day, when so many people have given their limbs, when so many people have died for our flag, it's just disrespectful. And
what would you say to the Jets chairman?
So I would say to the Jets that he is slapping all of us veterans in the face, and he needs to reevaluate the situation and understand that if his players want to protest, God bless, they have every right to, he should provide them a venue outside of the actual game to do so, because people are there to be entertained. They're not there for political statements. And again, they don't have they're not individuals at that moment. They represent the NFL, and they relinquish their rights to their individuality when they step on the field.
Let me get
He's encouraging that bad behavior, the owner of the Jets, by saying, I'll pay the fine. Now, there's no penalty for disrespecting our flag, disrespecting our national anthem. There is a First Amendment right. But the Supreme Court said there could be restrictions on time, place, and manner. And that's not the right time, not the place, and certainly not the right manner.
So what would you say to the chairman?
I would tell the chairman that he's encouraging that behavior. And if those individuals decide that they want to disrespect our flag themselves and do this anyhow, this kneel down, let them pay their own fines.
All right, we're going to have much more.
And one of the ways that the people can stand up, stop buying tickets to go see the Jets. Don't tune them out.
Okay.
Don't watch the games. And you'll see when the dollars go down and they can't get paid those millions to play, then you'll see them change. They're all of a sudden, they won't need their First Amendment rights.
We got to pay our bills. We're going to a quick commercial break ourselves. We'll be right back, everybody.